Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, sports fans. I'm your host, Ryan Stern. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bench, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. Good morning, everyone. How are you doing today? Once again, I'm your host, Ryan Stern. Welcome to Beyond the Bench. Once again, we are brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. Follow them on Twitter, at BackSportsPage, on Facebook, Facebook.com/BackSportsPage. You can follow me on Twitter, at RStern33BSP. Follow the show on Twitter, at Beyond the Bench. And the show is on Facebook, facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. 760-283-0846. We will be taking your calls today. You have any questions regarding anything with sports? But today we will be focusing on the NFL, a little bit of fantasy football coming at your hands. 9:30, we will be talking to John Lau, footballdiehards.com. We will be talking about the fantasy relevance of the players in the NFC North and NFC East. We did start our NFC North preview last week, ran out of time. We'll finish that, and we'll get into the NFC East right after that. Then we'll bring in John. We'll talk some fantasy football. It's getting close. The Giants open up camp in 2 days. The Buffalo Bills are opening up camp. You can almost taste it. Football is back. And it's a great thing. We will open the show. Little recap of what we went over last week. We did start our NFC North previews. I do like the Green Bay Packers to and remember, the Packers did win the division last year, but they won it at 8-8. So they weren't a great team. Part of that was because their quarterback missed half the year. Aaron Rodgers is back. He's healthy. I think they go on. They've had some additions that they made to secure up that defense. The Chicago Bears, they're going to be a dangerous offensive team. I don't know how they're going to be defensively. They tried to shore up some holes. Don't know whether or not what they did was enough. But if they start clicking offensively the way that they can, they're going to be a scary team, and they're going to be a team that I'm going to speak with John about, because they're a team that packs a lot of offensive punch. And now, to continue our NFC North previews, let's get into the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions, I think, have the best chance of anybody in the division to surprise you and knock off the Packers. They have an even more explosive offense, I feel, than the Chicago Bears. Right, you look at, and they have the best wide receiver in the NFL. I don't care if Josh Gordon led the NFL in receiving yards last year, and even if he was not a dope and was still playing. Calvin Johnson is the best wide receiver in the game. You can double cover him and he still makes catches. What he had lacked over the past couple of years was a dynamic number two partner in crime. And I'm not saying that Golden Tate is going to go on and become a Hall of Famer. But Golden Tate is by far the best number two receiver that he's played alongside of, maybe in his entire career. Nate Burleson, when he was in the prime of his career, he was okay. I think Golden Tate has every chance to be a better wide receiver than Nate Burleson was. Golden Tate is coming off of a season where he essentially was the number one wide receiver on a team that just won the Super Bowl. That's what he was most of the years. Sidney Rice, Percy Harvin, they weren't visible for most of, if not all of the year. Granted, they're a run-first team. So maybe he got to see a lot of single coverages because teams are stacking up boxes. But Golden Tate is the best number two guy Calvin Johnson has worked with. Stafford is going to be a stud this year in fantasy football. From what I've come across, Matt Stafford is the number four guy off the board, and that's behind Manning, Rodgers, and Breeze. Three all-time greats. Matt Stafford is right there. There was one mock draft that I saw that Matt Stafford was the number one receiver take, quarterback take. And there's one league that I play in that offers a point per completion. And as many times as Peyton Manning throws the ball, as many times as Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers throws the ball, Stafford's going to throw the ball more than them. They're a high-octane, up-tempo offense, and there's nothing Matt Stafford enjoys more than flinging that ball around. They have... And then you have Reggie Bush, Joyke Bell, two established... Reggie Bush is pretty much established. Joyke Bell should be. Joyke Bell had a great season last year for someone who saw limited action. So I think the two of them, and they paid Joyke Bell. They gave him $6 million a year. So they're expecting him to have a similar, if not an increased role this year than he had last year. And last year, he was very effective. But again, just like the Chicago Bears, it's going to be all about the defense for the Lions. And they have as dynamic a front four as you'll ever see, especially those two monsters in the middle with Sue and Fairley. Sue and Fairley are the best defensive tackle combination. They're the best defensive tackle combination in the NFL. Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley. And I don't even think it's close. And on the outside, you have Ziggy Ansah. Jason Jones brought in Daryl Tapp. Jason Jones is, well, I think, one of the more underrated defensive ends in the entire NFL. Ziggy Ansah, number five overall pick last year. If a lot of people project him to be similar to what Jason Pierre-Paul was coming out of South Florida. If Ziggy Ansah can put up any sort of career path that Jason Pierre-Paul had up until his injury about a year and a half ago. Remember, and Jason Pierre-Paul's second and third seasons in the NFL, he was among the top three defensive ends in all of football. He made a drastic jump after his first season. And if Ziggy Ansah can put that constant pressure on coming off the blind side, this is going to be a scary defensive front. Obviously, the big questions for the Lions are going to be their back seven. They did bring in a kid out of BYU that I love. They drafted Kyle Van Noy. I think they got him as it was an absolute steal. They drafted him in the second round, 40th overall. I had Kyle Van Noy, even though in my mock draft I didn't have him going in the first round. Kyle Van Noy was in my top 32. Is that disruptive a player? So I think that was a great addition. For the Lions, depleted linebacking corps. Guy that goes unnoticed a lot, DeAndre Levy, had a solid season last year. He's not going to wow you. He's just solid. He makes plays. Can Stephen Tulloch come back? Other than that, there aren't a lot of names that really make you think that this is going to be a special group. Rookie linebackers don't always have great rookie seasons. So that's why I'm tempering my ambitions for Kyle Van Noy this year. But if he can have a solid season, all the Lions' defense needs to do is be solid. They need to be average because their offense is above average. It's well above average. If they have an average defense, this team has a shot to make a deep run. Now, on the back end of things, they brought in James Adebo. That's not going to scare anybody. Quinn Glover is okay as a free safety. You look at some of their cornerbacks. They bring back Rasheem Mathis. He's at the end of his career. He's not something that they're looking for as a long-term solution. Cassius Vaughn is okay. Darius Slay, they drafted him with a mid-round pick last year. They like his development. They think he may be a starter this year. I don't know. I don't see it. That cornerbacking crew is scary how inefficient it may be. And there are times where a cornerbacking crew gets helped out by a pass rush. And the Lions need that front four to really do the job for the cornerback. They need to put that constant pressure on, because if a quarterback has any time against that secondary, they're going to make plays. The Lions are one of the hardest teams for me to put my finger on. If I had to say a record, I'm giving them 9 to 10 wins. They're going to have a shot at the playoffs because their offense is going to be that good. And I think the addition of Golden Tate is one of the more unnoticed acquisitions of anybody in free agency this year. Watch out for the Lions. If that defense can click, they're gonna be able to make a deep run. Then we go on to the final team in the NFC North, a team that I feel is a year or two away from making some noise. They have they've had five first-round draft picks in the last 2 years. So they have a lot of talent, but the talent is young. And the one thing that may scare me about the Vikings is that with them being maybe a year or two away, maybe that's the year or two that Adrian Peterson starts to get phased out because he is getting older. And, I mean, if there's one thing that you've learned, you cannot you cannot count out Adrian Peterson. If there's anything that he has brought to your awareness is that you cannot count this guy out. But he is now at 29, and it is at age 30 that you really see that dramatic drop-off when it comes to elite-level running backs. Most running backs don't make it till the age of 30. The ones who can start their entire careers and make it to age 30 are going to be among the elite running backs in the game. And Adrian Peterson is an elite running back in the NFL and in NFL history. If he were able to have stayed healthy throughout his entire career, you really got to make him on the LeBron level because he's just that physically dominant when it comes to a size, speed, strength, physical prowess coming out of the backfield. That, I mean, it really is impressive. When you look at how big this guy is, how fast he is, how quick he moves, the change of direction, Adrian Peterson is the real deal. And there's a reason why, even at age 29, Adrian Peterson is still going in the top four of pretty much every fantasy draft that there is. He's going anywhere from 1 to 4, depending on the score. And to tell you the truth, in a standard league that doesn't offer, and I think that he may even increase his catches this year with North Turner coming in, and that's a real positive for your fantasy players. North Turner, as a coordinator, equals fantasy prowess. So, I mean, Adrian, but in standard leagues, I can see Adrian Peterson going number one overall. Because I think he's the safest of all the big guys to get yards and touchdowns. And that's what you're looking for in standard, yards and touchdowns. The big question for the Vikings is going to be, who's going to play quarterback? You have Matt Cassel, who is a veteran. He's competent, was able to gain a rapport with some of the receivers last year, including one that I am so high on this year. There's nothing that wows you about Matt Cassel. Remember, Matt Cassel went 7 years without starting a game. He was behind Carson Palmer at USC, and then he was behind Tom Brady in New England. Until Tom Brady got hurt. And if Tom Brady doesn't get hurt that 1 year, we may not know what Matt Cassel would have ever been because there's a good chance he doesn't step foot on the field. And the only reason that he's gotten as big a contract as he's had is because he got to play with a great team that was ready to make a run. He wasn't ready to take them there, but the team carried him to an 11-5 season that year. Patriots team was really good. And if Tom Brady were the quarterback for that Patriots team, they're going to win the Super Bowl that year. That's just my take on everything. But the Vikings, I can definitely see them being a year away, because I think that Teddy Bridgewater, and I said it throughout the draft process, Teddy Bridgewater was the best quarterback in the draft this year. I don't give two hoots about that he had it his pro day. There has to be some validity to the way that he played on the field. And you hear reports out of Minnesota, he's making all the throws. And while he may not get a chance to start the season, and it may be best for him if he doesn't, because they do have someone who is capable of handling a team like Castle. Get him used to the speed of the game from the sideline. But Teddy Bridgewater will start at some point this year. If he doesn't, that means the Vikings are going to the playoffs, because the only reason that Castle would stay in is that he's bringing them to a magical season. I just don't see it happening. And if one player, I think, is going to be the reason that if the Vikings really have tremendous offensive success this year, it's going to be Cordarrelle Patterson. And I hope I'm in a bunch of fantasy leagues, as a lot of my listeners know. And I really hope that not too many of the guys in my league are listening right now, because I'm gunning to get Cordarrelle Patterson in just about every league that I own. You look at what he did over the last 5-6 games of the year last year, and there is a learning curve for wide receivers in their rookie year. A lot of them, it takes the full year. It took about 2/3 of the year for him, because the last 5 games of the year, he was a wide receiver 1. And I think Cordarrelle Patterson has every opportunity, even with a guy like Matt Castle, who isn't going to wow you with numbers, because Cordarrelle Patterson can do it rushing, receiving, returning. He's a triple threat. He's Percy Harvin with size and without the injury risk yet. That's what Cordarrelle Patterson is. I really think that this guy is primed for a breakout season. Again, the issue with the Vikings is going to be on defense. They're just not good in too many places. They did bring in Captain Munnerlyn, who had a really good season last year for the Panthers, but that was one season out of 6. There were 5 other seasons that he underperformed. I don't see Captain Munnerlyn being a difference maker in a secondary. Is Xavier Rhodes ready to step up? Is he ready to take that role of being a number one cornerback on? I don't see that happening either. Cheryl's, Julian Posey, Sean Prater, these names are really not that good. I really don't like the secondary for the Vikings. And then especially you look down at safety. They bring in Robert Blanton. He's all right. Third-year guy at Notre Dame. Antoine Exum, rookie out of Virginia Tech. They're saying a lot of good things about him. But they're saying a lot of good things about him because the rest of the safeties, aside from Harrison Smith, Harrison Smith is by far, he's their defensive captain. Say what you will about some of their linebackers that have some experience, Harrison Smith is their best defensive player. aside from that, they have three holes. The linebacker core. They draft Anthony Barr. A little bit of an overdraft. I think he's better fit as a 3-4, not a 4-3, unless they want to make him into a defensive end, which I think he's better off as a defensive end in the NFL in a 4-3. I question that pick a lot. I just didn't see the scheme fit because I think he is a true 3-4 outside linebacker. And that's not what the Vikings run. Obviously, they must have seen something in their personal workouts, in their private workouts, and they felt that he could take on that role. They have him listed on their website as a linebacker, so that's obviously where they expect him to play. Chad Greenway was one of my favorite guys because he was so solid, made every tackle you asked him to make. But he's getting older and battling injuries. The rest of this linebacking core makes the Giants linebackers look like Pro Bowlers. Up front, you lose maybe the greatest defensive player in the history of your franchise, Jared Allen. You draft Scott Crichton. He's an underrated guy out of Oregon State. I think he's a solid, but he's not ready to step into the shoes of Jared Allen. They give Everson Griffin a lot of money. I think they gave him $40 million over 5 years. That's a lot of money for a guy who has, I think, 5 starts in his career. Brian Robeson, he's all right. He's getting older. But there's a lot of questions on that line, and they lose the second of the Williams brothers, Kevin. He leaves. Is Sharif Floyd ready to step in after being pretty much a bust after falling? He was thought to be a top 10 pick in last year's draft. Fell all the way down. I think it was down to 23 to the Vikings. He was one of their 3 first-round picks last year. Sharif Floyd was a bust last year. And now you're starting to see why he may have fallen. The one move that the Vikings made on defense that I think was a solid move was Linval Joseph. Linval Joseph is going to have to be the stalwart of that defense. He was the stalwart for the Giants defense up front for quite some time. But now he's going to be asked to come into a new situation and produce right away. There's one guy, though, that I do not have problems with producing right away, and that is John Laub, footballdiehards.com. How you doing this morning, John?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Talking football. Football is back. We have training camps opening up this week. It's such a great feeling.
It is absolutely. I can't believe the amount of time I've been submersing myself in research and studying and how enjoyable it is. And it's only, what is today actually, July 20th? I'm blown away that I can enjoy football talk this much, but it's pretty incredible at this time of the year.
Oh, absolutely. And so I want to talk to you about the fantasy relevance. We're doing our NFC North and our NFC East previews this morning. Really, you see the guys out of the NFC North as being, there are a lot of studs coming out of that division at pretty much every position, maybe except tight end. But you have a couple top quarterbacks. You have a couple top running backs all coming out of that division. We'll start with the running backs, and you're starting to see a lot of places that the top four guys coming off of boards two of them are running backs out of the North. You have Adrian Peterson with the Vikings, Matt Forte out of the Chicago Bears. Why do you see Matt Forte being he was a sort of a late first, early second last year. What makes Matt Forte the candidate to really jump up to that top four spot this year?
Well, I think the first thing that fantasy football fans are looking at with Forte is clearly head coach Mark Trestman. Trestman utilizes his running back incredibly well in the passing game. I'm one of those old guys, and I remember Charlie Garner way back with John Gruden when Trestman was in Oakland. And Garner had 90 receptions for 1 year. And Garner was a good back. He wasn't a great back. He had a nice NFL career. And he had one or two good fantasy seasons, but they were under Trestman. And Forte is a very good above-average receiver. And you just look at those weapons on the outside and you say to yourself, how can a defense cover Forte in the flat? If they cover Forte in any way, you're going to allow Jeffries. You're going to allow Marshall to get deep on you, and you can't do that. You'd rather give up 10 or 15 yards to Forte. And if you just see that there's no way Forte doesn't catch 70 passes in this offense. Plus, even though he's not a great short yardage guy, we've all known that as fantasy football fans, they brought in a failed experiment in Michael Bush to be their short yardage guy, and that didn't work for them. But there's no one else on this roster. So by default, Forte is going to be your goal line guy, and he's going to be the guy within the 10-yard line. He used to get pulled by the Bears. So you got to think double-digit touchdowns is a no-brainer. So I think when you just look at those factors, Forte just jumps right off the charts. However, there is a little bit concern. The number of carries at Tulane was astronomical for a college runner. The number of touches he's got in the pro game is a tremendous amount. But he's under 30, he's 29, and I think the stars are aligning correctly for him.
Now, we're looking at the wide receivers, and you really see that maybe five out of the top 10, 11, 12 wide receivers in the NFL are coming out of this NFC North, with Calvin, you mentioned Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Jordy Nelson, and Randall Cobb. And all those, I can see all of them having spectacular seasons. But if there's one guy that I'm pressing to have on my team, no matter the format, it's the second-year guy from the Vikings and Cordarrelle Patterson. What do you think we're going to see out of Cordarrelle Patterson this year?
Now, it's interesting because I've participated in two drafts already and numerous mock drafts, and in every one I've grabbed Cordarrelle Patterson. But I've been getting him at this point in the fifth or sixth round. I clearly would not take him in the third round. Fifth and sixth is fantastic, in my opinion. Fourth round is you got to think and look at the options on the board. But I am extremely high on Patterson. I think the hyperbole machine is starting to gear up, and fantasy fans are probably going to move his ADP up. But I think his potential is terrific. And I'm a big believer in Norv Turner. I'm a system guy. I follow coaches. I follow offensive coordinators. I like how they game plan. And Norv Turner, all the way from Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper and Vincent Jackson, all the way up now until last year with Josh Gordon, he knows how to game plan for his number one receiver. He also likes big-bodied receivers. He is very good at coaching those guys, getting them to have their fundamentals, their footwork, their turning on a dime, running crisp routes. He's also, I believe, very good at limiting what they do poorly. He's going to use his stud receivers, and he's going to maximize their talent. Patterson has excellent skill set, his body, his hands. He is raw, but Turner's going to get the most out of this guy. He also, I like the fact that Greg Jennings and Kyle Rudolph are on the field. Patterson is not going to be asked to carry the entire offense. And you still have Adrian Peterson. So I think this is a perfect storm of opportunity for Patterson with the coach, with the talent around him, and with the offense. I think Patterson's going to be clearly worth a fifth-round pick and potentially a fourth-round pick, and that ADP is probably going to be driven up as the draft, as the kickoff comes closer in September. I love him, and I want him as a second, and I'm almost willing to take him as a first receiver on the team this year.
It's funny because with the true fantasy lovers tend to really enjoy having their drafts right before the season starts because they want to have as much information out as possible. But it's guys like Cordarrelle Patterson that make me want to say, you know what, let's get this draft done in early with before his name gets out there during training camps and say, wow, look at what Cordarrelle Patterson is doing. Because just like you, I have a feeling that throughout the training camp and preseason schedule, you're going to start to see his ADP soar way up high. And speaking of ADPs soaring way up high, I think that the quarterback that you're going to start seeing ADPs going up on is going to be Jay Cutler. Because with all of this talk about that they're going to be throwing, you know, Mark Trestman has a high octane offense. He's going to be throwing the ball to Matt Forte into the flat, and he has the Twin Towers on the outside. Why, with all of these passing options that are such highly rated, are we starting to see Jay Cutler fall between maybe 12 and 15 in the ranks? I don't see that happening. I see his ADP soaring during the preseason.
You know, Ryan, I have to agree with you. I did a ranking of my quarterbacks for the Football Diehards draft book, which is coming out in a month, a cheap plug there. And in it at the time, this was probably about mid-June, I had put Cutler at 15, I think. And as I've been studying and listening and reading, I think I might have actually been wrong, and I'm the first one to admit when I'm wrong. I probably have Cutler now at 12 or 11. I'm becoming more comfortable with Cutler as my number one quarterback. In mock draft, I've been getting Cutler and or Cam Newton as my two quarterbacks in rounds, Tony Romo, I should say three. So between those three guys, I've been drafting them in rounds 9 through 12. And I'm almost now convinced that I want Cutler most out of those three individuals. The talent around him is just so astronomical. And I think you might have a perfect combination of skill set and experience. Cutler walked into this league out of Vanderbilt with a skill set and an arm strength that was just off the charts. His maturity wasn't necessarily there. Shanahan's incredibly tough on coaching. I think the most underrated aspect is Shanahan's been the most overrated coach for the last decade. Other than John Elway, he has buried quarterbacks. He didn't get along with Griffin, who I think is an astronomical talent, and Cutler got trapped in this Shanahan. Then along comes crazy Josh McDaniel. Crazy Josh McDaniel actually thinks that Kyle Orton was a better quarterback than Jay Cutler. If Josh McDaniel had kept Jay Cutler and not drafted Tim Tebow, he would probably be the coach of the Broncos right now. He drafted Decker. He drafted Demaryius Thomas. But he blew the entire organization up by bringing in Kyle Orton over Jay Cutler. Then Cutler is traded to the Bears. He walks into Chicago, and that offensive line is a complete disaster. The guy was a tackling dummy. Lovie Smith is, at best, an average offensive coach. And I understand the Bears had a nasty defense. Their strength was on that defense, and Lovie wanted to play towards that which is fine. But Jay Cutler got beat up. Now, finally, he has a coach that has coached up the offensive line. Jay Cutler isn't getting beat up back there. Jay Cutler, last 2 years, he has gotten hurt. But I am injury agnostic. I am not going to try to predict injuries. Before the last two, Cutler had stayed, for the most part, pretty healthy. He was very solid. I think this is a great opportunity for Cutler now. The more I analyze it, the more I think about it with Martellus Bennett, Marcus Wheaton, the Twin Towers, Matt Forte. How can Cutler not throw 30 touchdowns and throw for 4,200 yards in this offense? So right now I'm very comfortable having Cutler as my number one fantasy quarterback and grabbing him with pick number 11 or 12 out of the quarterbacks on the board.
It's really players like this that really make you see why the strategy of not drafting a quarterback early really comes into your favor. Because if you look at what your roster looks like, there are so many fantasy players out there that look at what Peyton Manning did last year and are going to draft him in the first round. Would you rather have on your team Peyton Manning and Reuben Randall, or would you rather have Demaryius Thomas and Jay Cutler? That's really, if you're looking at the flip-flops, I think Jay Cutler is so much closer to Peyton Manning than someone that you're going to get in the 10th, 11th, 12th rounds at the wide receiver position is going to be to a Demaryius Thomas, a Julio Jones, someone like that.
Ryan, I couldn't agree with you more. I've tried strategies where I take one of the big three quarterbacks in the second round, Breeze, Rodgers, or Manning. And at the end of the mock draft, I'm still ending up with a backup of Tony Romo, which if I have Manning or Rodgers, I'm never going to use Tony Romo. It's just, it becomes a roster spot that isn't going to be viable. So I'd rather have Demaryius Thomas and Jay Cutler or Demaryius Thomas and Robert Griffin and Tony Romo. I completely agree with you at this point. Now, I do think if somehow the big three fall to the end of the third round, if you're in a three-team or 12-team mock draft and overall pick 34 and Peyton's on the board, and you've already got, let's say you've got Eddie Lacy and you've got Dez Bryant, maybe I could do the quarterback. But that's the earliest. And it would have to be only one of the big three. I would not reach for Matt Stafford. I would not reach for an Andrew Luck in the third or fourth round. If I don't get one of those big three at the end of the third, I'm going to wait until the 10th or 11th round to draft a quarterback. I completely agree with you.
Oh, absolutely. And they're Some of the other guys that you're starting to see fall down into that same spot as Cutler, you're starting to see Matt Ryan, who if his two main targets stay healthy, I think is due for a big bounce back. Even Tom Brady is falling down into that range. But there is one guy that I want to talk about as we shift our attention to the NFC East. And he may not be a viable fantasy option this year. Last year, he was sort of at the very low end of QB1s during draft season and had just an absolute abysmal year. Not all of it was his fault. But I think this year, especially in a two-quarterback league, there aren't many QB2s that you're going to find that have the potential to do as well as someone like an Eli Manning. Do you see any sort of bounce back in Eli this year?
You know, Ryan, I am the biggest Eli Manning fan. I'm not a Giants fan. I rode Eli Manning to three fantasy championships. He is a very good NFL quarterback. Last year, I'm going to make the assumption was an anomaly of his career. I think everything went wrong for the New York Giants last year. I think Kevin Gilbright's offense got stale. I believe after 7 years, The defenses knew it. I just didn't see a lot of creativity in his offensive game plan anymore. Then the offensive line just kind of fell apart, and Eli was getting whacked back there. Then you had Nick. I mean, it's still one of the most inexplicable falls from grace of Hakeem Nick. He just completely, I mean, he went from being a tremendous player in 2010, 2011, to basically being a shell of an NFL receiver. He couldn't score a touchdown. Victor Cruz was bottled up. Without Hakeem Nick, he was bottled up. Obviously, Reuben Randall blew more coverage reads on his pattern than any receiver I can possibly remember. I mean, I'm old. I've been watching football for over 30 years. When Eli Manning is throwing the ball and there isn't a receiver within 5 yards and a safety is picking him off, it is not Eli's fault. A receiver ran the wrong route. And I guarantee you almost every time, Reuben Randall was the problem in that pattern. Eli is not a dumb quarterback. You do not win 2 Super Bowls if you are not an intelligent quarterback. And I've probably seen Eli Manning play quarterback 60 times in my life because I live in the tri-state area. He's always on TV. When the Giants are good, they're on prime time. Everything. I could not have explanations for what was happening for Eli Manning last year. And I could not, his skill set is not off. I did not see a regret. His footwork looked pretty good. He was following through. He is still one of the toughest guys in the pocket. I will say to this day, that beating he took against the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC Championship game is one of the greatest beatings that I've ever seen an NFL quarterback take. That game against the 49ers, if you don't think Eli Manning quarterback, if you do not think Eli Manning is a great quarterback, I just don't know what you're watching. Now, said all that, yes, I think he's going to have a bounce back year. I understand. I think I have him ranked at number 20, which would put him on the bottom edge of a second-team quarterback. There is no way that offense is that bad this year. I love they brought in a new coach from Green Bay. I think Rashard Jennings was a no-brainer. I think David Wilson has a change of pace back as a spot runner. He might not be a full-load running back. He might not be the bell cow that we had thought. The receiving, I mean, maybe it's not as simplified the offense for Reuben Randall. Kevin Gilbride's offense was predicated on every receiver probably had 3 options on any route depending on the dictation of the defense. You know what? Reuben Randall can't do that. Reuben, you got 1 route. Run the route.
Run it.
Eli, run it. Don't worry about anything else, Reuben. If you're open, Eli will get it to you. If it's not open, we forget about it. Now, I don't think the LSU receiver Odell Beckham is going to get a ton of time. He's a rookie. But I do think in 3 and 4 receiver sets, I do think the Giants are going to be better with Odell Beckham. I think the kid can catch 50 passes. He is better than what they had in the past. Nick is gone, which I think is a benefit to the Giants. Also, I think the guy, Juergens last year, was very good at the end of the year. He's an NFL player. So I think when the Giants go 4 receivers, I think they're going to be all right on that. And I do think the Giants made a calculated risk losing the tight end. They have been for years able to get production out of average tight ends. They rolled the dice last year, and they finally drew craps at the tight end position. And Eli needs a tight end. But maybe they go 4 receivers-wise this year more often with Odell Beckham running kind of the tight end route and keeping it simple. I think the Giants' passing game will rebound. I look for Eli Manning to throw about 24 to 26 touchdowns that year and close to 4,000 yards.
If anything, his offensive line can't get any worse than it was last year. They did make a couple new additions. They brought in Jeff Schwartz, the big guard from the Kansas City Chiefs, who was a big contributor to Jamal Charles' season last year. They drafted Weston Richburg out of Central Colorado, who a lot of draft experts had listed as the number one center in the entire draft. So they did bring in John Jerry, too. So you see that their offensive line, and if Chris Snee can stay healthy, it cannot be worse than it was last year.
Couldn't agree with you more. It cannot be as bad as it was last year.
Now, want to shift our attention to Philadelphia, and we're here. Nick Foles, he had such a spectacular year last year coming in for Michael Vick, which we all knew was going to happen because when doesn't Michael Vick come out? But now he lost his big play guy in DeSean Jackson. They did draft Jordan Matthews, who is a speed guy too. And Jeremy Maclin is back. I'm not saying that he's going to throw two interceptions this year like he did last year, but do you think that last year was an anomaly for Nick Foles, or do you think with the crew of wide receivers that he has this year, he can continue on the same path?
This is a question that I have been studying more and more, because I have to kind of roll in my mind, is Nick Foles that talented, or is Chip Kelly that great of a coach? And I've really been attempting to analyze this more and more as the season progresses, because Nick Foles' numbers last year were off the charts, 27-2. I mean, two interceptions for a senior player. I mean, that is mind-boggling to me. You know, we were just talking about Eli, and Eli throws two interceptions and a half. I mean, he's never come close. They're different quarterbacks. So I have to ask myself, there is no – can Nick Foles do it again? And my conclusion is there is no way Nick Foles can only throw five or less touchdowns, which I think might have been the progression if you do it over a 16-game season. However, is he going to throw 15 or 8? And that's a big difference. Now, also, I tend to think young teams that make big jumps, like Philadelphia did from 2012 to 2013, the following year, there's usually a regression. I'm not sure if it's just you were able to do things that surprise defensive coordinators or surprise offensive coaches, or if it is a little bit of ego and self-confidence that the players get too convinced that they're special and they just don't work as hard. I've always tried to put my finger on this dilemma, but I've seen it over my 30 years often. So I say to myself, historically, teams like the Eagles usually take a step backwards. And even second-year quarterbacks like Foles take a step backwards. And I also think DeSean Jackson was a major mistake by Chip Kelly. I think this was hubris and ego got in his way. The NFL is a talent-driven league. They wouldn't be paying these athletes millions of dollars. They wouldn't spend millions of dollars on scouting. They wouldn't have this draft where there's this acquisition of talent. And Chip Kelly is convinced that his system will work regardless of the talent in it. And to an extent, he is true. I do think, obviously, his system is good. However, you do need special players in that system. And last year he had two special players, LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson. I'm not convinced Foles is special yet. I'm not sure if he's a system or if he's a great talent. That is still open. It's too early to make that decision. We know McCoy is a special talent. DeSean Jackson, despite what most fantasy fans think, he is a special talent. And I think that is going to hurt this offense. Riley Cooper, to me, is just a guy who succeeded in Chip Kelly's offense. The two tight ends, Celek and Ertz, are nice players in Chip Kelly's offense. Macklin didn't even play last year. These types of injuries, I think too many fans and football coaches just assume everyone's going to be Adrian Peterson when they bounce back. I'm much more skeptical. Adrian Peterson was not the norm. He was the definitive outlier. I think Robert Griffin is
not
more
the
norm. So I'm very weary. I think I go with Jay Cutler over Nick Foles. I think more like 25 touchdowns and 12 interceptions at the end of the campaign is going to look like Nick Foles' numbers.
One more before we have to wrap things up, and that's going to be the bounce back of Robert Griffin III. We're hearing all good things. The knee brace is off. They do bring in the aforementioned DeSean Jackson. He has a brand-new shiny tight end in Jordan Reed, who a lot of people think is on the verge of a breakout season. Griffin, are you confident enough in him to stay healthy throughout the year to warrant taking him as a top-10 quarterback?
I do. I'm not going to be shied away from talent because of injuries in the past, unless it's an 8-year track record. Robert Griffin was amazing at Baylor. I had him on my college fantasy football team. I watched him. I definitely believe that the Redskins made the right decision when they took Griffin and moved up in the draft to get him. I said it earlier with Cutler. I think Shanahan's a disaster. I think Shanahan, at the end of his career, was a quarterback killer. I think he hurt Robert Griffin as much as any coach has ever hurt a quarterback's progress. He brought him back too early. He had a terrible relationship with Griffin. Everything that I've seen with Griffin, he is a very nice young man. He is a good person. He's a hard worker, and he's an extremely talented athlete. And I think Shanahan's relationship was a disaster with Robert Griffin, and I don't understand why. I think it was all driven by Shanahan, and I understand why Griffin was upset with Shanahan. And I think he hurt him in that game. He knew he was injured in the playoff game against Seattle. I think he rushed him back too early because his job was on the line last year. I think the only thing Shanahan did right was he put Griffin on the bench late in the season. That was the correct move. I think Gruden is the kind of coach who's going to have a relationship that is positive, that is going to reflect the skill set that Robert Griffin has. I think he can work with these younger quarterbacks. I just think the synergy between Griffin and Gruden is going to be so positive. And I look at what Gruden did with Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu. And I think the combo of Pierre Garçon, Andre, and DeSean Jackson, as well as DeAndre Roberts, Andre Roberts, is so much better in Washington. I like Griffin. I have him at number 8 right now. He is a steal to me in the 7th or 8th round of fantasy draft.
John, I want to thank you as always. Great information. You really show that you know your stuff. Looking forward to having you on as we get into the real thick of things into draft season. Everyone follow John on Twitter at GridironSchol91, GridironSchol91. And make sure to check out his work on footballdiehards.com. I'm a subscriber. There's only one fantasy site that I subscribe to, and it's footballdiehards.com. So I want to make sure that you check that out. John, we'll talk to you soon, buddy, all right?
Thank you, Ryan. It's been a great day. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And that will be all for today. Down my part of the reality of the NFCs next week. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Beyond the Bench. Go to facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. Follow me on Twitter at rstern33BSP. Once again, you've been listening to Beyond the Bench. I'm your host, Ryan Stern, and until next week, enjoy the opening of training camps.